Continuing the set of talks on the Bodhisattva way. And what I want to speak about today is the six paramitas, the wise ways of being. I think there was a translation, Deshimaru, when he commented on it, it was described as the six ways to wake up a great person, or wake up greatness within a person. It was translated as. And sometimes it's said that from a Mahayana perspective, the six paramitas replace Buddha's Eightfold Path. And to some extent that's true, but actually what they do is they include and then build on the Eightfold Path. And the way they include the Eightfold Path is, I can't remember if I said at the beginning of this set of talks or a different time, but there is the three kind of pillars of a practice are Kai, Jo, E. And in Sanskrit, that's Sila, Dhyana, and Prajna. And that is ethics, moral conduct is the first, Sila, which is the embodied in the precepts. Dhyana is meditation, and in fact the word dhyana in Sanskrit translates into the word zen in Japanese. And then wisdom, paramita. And those three kind of pillars exist in the original Buddhism, Theravadan Buddhism. And if you read a book on Theravadan Buddhism, they will use those three pillars to speak about the Eightfold Path, like what the Buddha taught, Rahola, one of the famous first kind of books in English about Buddhist teachings. A very good book, worth reading. And Rahola speaks about Kai, Jo, E, or rather Sila, Dhyana, Prajna, and speaks about the Eightfold Path in that, how the Eightfold Path starts off with behaviour, then moves on to practice of meditation, and then finally leads to wisdom. So the paramitas include, because the paramitas, there's six principles in the paramitas, and three of those are the principles that I've already mentioned. So I don't want to speak more about them, because I've spoken about them at other times. I want to instead focus on the three that aren't included. So I'll say what all six are, so that you know the order. It talks about with dana, fuse, which is giving, generosity. The second is sila, kai, the ethical conduct, behaviour. The third is shanti, which is patience. The fourth is virya, which is energy, effort, discipline. The fifth is dhyana, which is meditation, zazen. And then the sixth is prajna, which is wisdom. And so that's the six. And as I said, those three, sila, dhyana, prajna, map onto the Eightfold Path. And so there's three more things that are brought beyond the Eightfold Path here. And I will speak about what those three things are. First of all, there is giving and generosity, dana. And it's said that dana, giving and generosity, is in some ways at the foundation of practice. of connecting, of letting go of the ego. An act of giving can be, isn't always, but can be a letting go of the ego. One gives, one receives. Both giving and receiving can be a letting go of the ego. It's said that in fact, in the Meal Sutra, when we chant the Meal Sutra, it says that the giver, the receiver, and the gift all in the end are empty. In other words, are beyond form. So we let go of the ego in the act of giving. And giving can be, for some people it's harder than others. And the other thing to say is that for some people it's easy to give some things and less easy to give other things. I'm talking about kind of psychologically and emotionally, if we look at our karma as opposed to what we have around us. But the important thing here is it's the spirit of giving. The spirit of giving in the sense of giving something with a spirit of not trying to get something out of that giving, not trying to, whether it's getting something out of that giving in terms of trying to get someone's kind of on someone's good side, or getting someone in debt to you in the sense of feeling that they have some responsibility towards you, or wanting to be liked. All these things are kind of where the way that the ego can get wrapped up in giving. But this paramita says, it says that put those things aside and give in a way that's appropriate to you. It might be giving the resources that you have, it might be giving the time you have, it might be giving the understandings, the skills that you have. All of these things can be given and shared with others. But whatever you give, it's important to let go of the self in that act of giving. So, for example, if you're giving kind of expertise and advice, don't do it in a way that expects. So, in some ways, my wife also, I've quoted a few times, where she says that unwanted advice is one of the kind of advice given when not asked for. is one of the most overrated gifts of all, in the sense that it's very easy to kind of give advice when people actually don't want it, and it might not be the right thing for them. And so you need to be wise in what's in the gifts that you give. Give in a way that supports the giver, the receiver, and the gift, but also all of humanity, all of existence in what's given. And also, I'd say there's always, in with these things, there's always the mirror as well. Look at how you receive from others. Look at how you receive. Don't just think about giving, but also look at the way in which you receive. Can you receive gifts in a way that is neither, oh no, you shouldn't, or taking others for granted? See, getting the balance between that, and both of those are acts of ego. You're taking someone else for granted is ego, or kind of being too self-effacing can also be an act of ego. And the other thing I'd say about related to that is that one thing that is really valuable to give is thanks, gratitude. So I think we often don't necessarily express our appreciation and gratitude, and that's something that, you know, however little resource you have, however little time you have, you can always express your gratitude for someone who you appreciate if they've done something. So expressing gratitude for is a gift. It's a gift, and I think I might have told this story before, but I expressed the gratitude to a good friend of mine. I said, "I really appreciate you as a friend," and you know, he's a typical, you know, late middle-aged man like me. Englishman, and found it quite difficult to receive. You know, he was really appreciative, but it was quite embarrassing for him that I was kind of just openly grateful to him for what he'd given me over the years. And so, you know, you can watch your ego in the way that you receive things as well. But as I said, just to go back to the point I was making there, gratitude. We can always give gratitude, give appreciation to others. That's a gift that no matter how little money we have, how little time we have, it's always possible to appreciate others, and so that's a good thing to give. Another thing here, this is from the commentary that we have. I'm not sure where this commentary came from, but I'm using here book that the people who are being ordained have already got access to, which is a leaflet that Lana, who leads the London Dojo, has written, and she's gathered a number of resources together relevant to the Bodhisattva. And it speaks here about how you can give fearlessness or peace of mind, which is effectively, that's partly through the practice, but also partly just simply being present with someone who's going through difficulties, just sitting with them, without putting your personal opinions on what they should do, etc., but listening. You know, these are all great gifts that can be given and are often underrated. Just listening in a way that doesn't judge, or even just sitting with someone who's going through difficulty and holding their hand. You know, all those things are great gifts. And so don't think that you need lots of money and lots of time. Just allow gifts to emerge from the awareness and wisdom that comes from practice. But I would say that, you know, all of us have blocks. I've spoken about this before, and think about how the ways in which you're blocked from giving sometimes. Think about how maybe you want to give something, and your karma blocks that it being given, and think about, just by being aware of that, it might change over time. So that's the first, dana, giving. Be generous. So the second, as I said, is sila, ethical conduct, which we've spoken about before. The next is shanti, patience. Patience so shanti also, it's from the same root in Sanskrit as peace. Can one find peacefulness in response to situations which have not resolved, have not changed, which have not fully performed through? And can we let go of our desire to sort things out straight away? Can we let go of our desire to want things to be sorted very quickly? Can we let go of the many ways in which our egos can get wrapped up in the a given situation, whether it's kind of just something that's going on in one's own personal life, or whether it's big kind of global, kind of geopolitics, whatever. But notice how one gets impatient, how one wants things to be resolved, how one thinks, not only want things to be resolved, but also we think we know how they should be resolved. Often we have quite a strong idea about how things should be, and the reality doesn't align with how we think things should be. And so having patience in response to that. And so the Zazen posture is effectively a posture of patience. It's a posture of simply sitting and being with what is, accepting what is. The small things in terms of discomfort that might be going on in one's body, but also maybe the larger things that can emerge in the ruminating thoughts in the mind, again, which might be personal or might be about bigger trends globally, etc. And so can we have patience? Can we cultivate patience? And the way we cultivate patience is by sitting in Zazen and noticing our impatience. That's always the thing. That's always the art of Zen, is to not force oneself to be different, but notice the ways in which our minds fall into habits, etc. And so can we notice the ways in which we're impatient in the mind? Notice how the mind wants to move things forward, wants to make things different. And simply sit with it and observe. Let go, come back, open. Always let go, come back, open. Of course, this also be patient. It sounds to say in, as again, I don't know where Lana got this text. It might even be her own words. Be patient with others and with oneself. That's kind of very important. We can notice ourselves getting irritated by other people, and as I spoke the other week, often that irritation reveals more about ourselves than it does about the other. So we can notice ourselves getting irritated with others. And can we accept that irritation within us and not express it in an impatient way? Can we not snap at others, not come out with the criticism of others in response to the impatience within us? It might be we need to act. You know, it's not to say we shouldn't act, but it should be acting from a space of peace rather than a space of irritation with the other person. And can we be patient with ourselves, recognising and accepting our many weaknesses and failings. and forgiving ourselves for those. We've spoken about repentance. In some ways, the act of being patient with oneself, noticing that we make the same mistakes again and again and again, and allowing that just to be how that is, but observing, forgiving ourselves, letting go, being patient, not expecting everything to happen at once, and allowing things to play out over time. So that's the third, patience, kshanti. The next is virya, which is effort, perseverance, energy. And this is that when we commit to a practice, we need some discipline. Our mind will want to pull us off in different directions. There's many shiny things in life which are attractive, or problems in life that we feel desperate to sort out. Virya says that's all very well and good, but if you are committing to the Bodhisattva way, stick with the practice, even when you don't feel like it. Don't just come along when you feel like it and then don't practice when you don't feel like it. Even when you feel like it, even when you don't feel like it, then practice. There was a quote that said, I don't know exactly where it's from, it was a Christian meditator, and I don't know if it's a kind of recent person or someone a while back. Please, I'm fairly patient with phones, but do remember to turn your phones off. I can hear someone's chiming out there. Try to remember to turn your phones off when you come here. Side note. I forgot what I was saying there. What was I talking about? Energy. Yeah. So we need to kind of persevere and come back, even when. Yeah. So the Christian meditator, the quote from them, he was saying, when life is, you should meditate half an hour every day. So I'm not saying that you should. I'm just using his words here. It's not necessarily what to do. You should meditate half an hour every day, except when you're really busy, in which case you should meditate an hour every day. So in other words, no matter how you feel, find some time and space in your life for practice, even when it feels difficult. So I would kind of not necessarily go along with that quote, but what I would say is even when things are difficult, even when you can't come to the dojo because you have a life situation, whatever, then still find a place of practice in your life. Still find space to practice in your life by creating a little bit of time, or even if it's just simply, if you're at your desk because you're busy working, just closing the eyes and taking 10 gentle breaths before going back to work, even small things like that. But don't ever, if you are committed, then stick with, persevere with the practice over time, and it will don't ever let the thread that you have committed to disappear completely. Someone's very whoever's phoning that person is very persistent. So over time it will. Quite a good resource here, thank you. So energy, perseverance, effort, and so it's a combination. You see, there's these different words that are used. It's sticking with something for a long time, but recognizing that requires some effort, and always that effort should be a wise effort. Just to be clear, it does not mean saying, right, I need to meditate in full lotus for 2 hours every day, otherwise I'm not a proper Buddhist. And desperately, heroically, in a very masculine way, trying to do that. So it's not about that. It's about skillful effort over time. If you're a lay practitioner, as we all are, it will be something that moves in and out. Sometimes you will be kind of more engaged. Sometimes you'll be less engaged. But this is saying, never disengage if you're serious about this practice. Never disengage completely. Always find a way to remain connected. So that is virya. So the last two I've spoken about before, but I'll just revisit very briefly. Dhyana, zazen. So at the heart of our practice, at the heart of our understanding, is the awareness that comes from zazen. So the practice of zazen, if you are not practicing Zazen, then you are not a Zen Bodhisattva, effectively. So that's, if you ever say it, that's what it is. It's kind of non-negotiable. And I would say more broadly, there's very few Buddhist schools. There is one that just does chanting, but in general, the heart of being a Buddhist is the practice of meditation. And if you're not meditating, you're probably not a Buddhist. If you are meditating, you might also not be Buddhist, but if you're not meditating, you're probably not a Buddhist. Yeah, okay. So that is dhyana, the practice of awareness through formal meditation. And then finally, prajna, wisdom. What we chant at the end of Zazen, we chant the Hanya Shingo, and the word Hanya translates to the prajna in Sanskrit, so it's the Sutra of Great Wisdom. There's two aspects of wisdom. There is the relative aspect and the absolute aspect, the personal aspect and the universal aspect. And the personal aspect of wisdom, and I've said this in different words so many times, but that's the job of a Zen teacher, to say the same thing again and again and again in different words. The purpose of, so in terms of the kind of relative personal wisdom, it is to become aware of the patterns that exist inside your psyche, which traditionally would be known as your karma, your karmic patterns. Become aware of them, notice how they cause suffering for you and for others, and through that act of awareness, and at times act of conscious control, then allow those patterns, accept them, but let go of them, and allow them to change over time into something that is allows you to be more in harmony with those around you and with yourself. So that's the on the relative side. And then on the absolute universal side, the prajna is the wisdom that arises in Zazen when one lets go of the self, when one becomes aware that these patterns, etc., are just constructions. They aren't ourselves. They are not me. The patterns and habits and tendencies and thoughts are not me. And instead become aware of the vast awareness which is both personal and also universal, and shared with all beings and shared with all existences. And so, in other words, seeing reality, seeing that any attempt we have to kind of define reality is limiting, and seeing that experience of being as it is comes from letting go of those attempts to define reality, letting go of our sense of kind of cutting up reality into what is and what isn't, black and white, good, evil, etc. Just letting go of that completely and experiencing reality as it is. And through that experience, seeing that the self itself, the stories we tell ourselves, are fundamentally empty of existence. So I'll stop there. That is the six parameters: giving, ethical conduct, patience, perseverance, practice of Zazen, and becoming conscious of the wisdom that arises through that practice. Okay. So thank you for listening. So if anyone's got any questions about what I've said, feel free.